Are you really fit? Are you really strong? Are you healthy? Have you been exercising for a really long time? Do you have some really strong ideas and opinions about how to get healthy, fit and strong? How to eat healthy? How to have a body that performs at its best? Are you performing at your best? And if the answer is yes, and somebody comes to you and says, how should I exercise? Is it possible that we would give people our opinion, our advice based on our experience? And it seems, of course we would, because it's worked for us. We're healthy, fit, strong humans. We've got a stack of energy. We perform at our best. We look great in the mirror, in and out of our clothes. And we are getting the results we want from our eating and exercise plan, which is the four things I always ask. Should we be able to demand those from our eating and exercise plan? If we do anything, should we be able to demand of the plan, I want to have a stack of energy. I want to perform at my best. I want to look great in and out of my clothes, and I want to get great results from this eating or exercise plan. Haha, sounds simple. But is it possible that what works for me might not work for you, and what works for you might not work for everybody else? And if that's a possibility, should we understand as exercise professionals, as coaches, even as parents and teachers who are giving advice about exercise or eating, should we know more than our own experience? Or a better question, our own experience, should we know the why and how? Why did it work and how did it work? Or why are we doing it and how does it work? Should we know the answers to those questions? And if somebody comes to us and says, what should I do? Because I need to be healthy, fit and strong. If we go to the gym, or if we do a boot camp, or if we lift weights, or if we run, or if we eat a certain way, is it possible that we would tell people to do that? You should run, or you should go to the gym, or you should eat this way because that's what I do. And is it possible that the person asking us those questions might not want to run? They hate running. Or they might not want to go to the gym. They hate gyms. They might not want to eat kale or green smoothies or blueberries or porridge. They hate all of those foods, even if they are considered superfoods. So what do we do if we really want to help people to get fit and to get strong? Where should they start? Where should they begin? We often call it a beginner's program. And I'm not a fan of that word because is it possible that we make people feel like they're a little bit inadequate? I'm just a beginner. I know when I go to the supermarket or to a retail store and somebody's got the training badge on, I always go out of my way to make them feel really special and important because the business is sharing with the world that they're just in training, they're beginners. So if we had a way of helping people to be healthy, fit and strong, even if they had never exercised before, so they were literally beginning their eating and exercise plan, there's another great concept that I constantly am aware of, which is if we never get away from the basics, we'll never have to go back to basics. And often in the exercise profession, you'll hear that, oh, we should go back to basics, or when we first started, this is what we did, or this is the basic program, or this is what you do when you are starting or beginning. Well, what if we gave people the best exercise at the start, at the beginning, and we never gave them a second best exercise? We often talk about variety, but is it important to have variety? Is it important to keep changing people's exercise programs? Is it important to do different kinds of classes or different kinds of runs or different kinds of exercise programs to keep people motivated and inspired? And it's a really great question. There's probably lots of argument as to whether or not that's true and that it should be done. But I always ask this question, if you go back to the basics, the ABC of the human body being healthy, fit and strong, and is it possible, here's a really interesting question, how would I learn how to read or write if I didn't know my alphabet? It's the fundamentals of reading and writing. I have to know the letters of the alphabet so I can learn how to read and I can learn how to write. Well, as an exercise professional, is it possible that our alphabet is anatomy and physiology? Should we know then what the body's made up of and how the body works before we give opinions and advice about how to keep that body healthy, fit and strong? Some people say they don't care. I don't care what the body's made of or how it works. I just want to know how to exercise or which is the best exercise so I can get the best results possible. And my response to that as an exercise professional originally used to be, well, I feel like my ego's been inflated because somebody just wants my opinion. But the challenge I then had after being an exercise professional for a very long time is that if people are relying on me to be their guru, to be the person who gives them advice on exercise and food, what if I'm not there? Or what if a better guru comes along? And I always ask that question. Doesn't matter how ripped somebody's abdominals are, is it possible that there's somebody else that's got more ripped abdominals? Doesn't matter how much passion and enthusiasm you have for your particular way of training or eating, is it possible that somebody else might have as much or more passion than you and their body looks better? So then people go, well, I'm going to go and train with them because their body's better than your body. Or I'm going to go and train with them because they've got more degrees than you have. Or I'm going to go and train with them because they've got more years experience than you have. Because that means people are relying on a guru to help them. They're relying on another person to give them advice. And I remember a very long time ago making a commitment that I wanted the people in my life to be able to work out for themselves whether an exercise was safe or unsafe, whether an eating plan was going to work for them or not, and whether or not they could stick to their exercise program for the rest of their lives. And that was a big one for me. I've seen too many people who start and stop an exercise program, start and stop an eating plan or diet, and end up completely screwed up in the head and their body's completely screwed up because they lose weight, gain weight, lose weight, gain weight. And they end up becoming mentally and physically very unhealthy because they keep stopping and starting. And I don't want that for anybody. I would love people to treat their exercise and eating plan the same way, and I'll say the same way that I do, which is simply I eat every day, I breathe every day, I shower every day, I brush my teeth every day, I wear clothes every day, and I exercise every day. It's just part of my life. And I'd love that for everybody. And when you're an exercise professional, as you would know, that the benefits of exercise are not just the long-term healthy bones, healthy heart and lungs, less chance of disease, and great hair, great skin, great nails. There's obviously an immediate benefit to exercise right now. If I exercise right now, I'm going to feel better. I'm going to have more energy. I'm going to pump neurotransmitters through my brain that literally make it impossible for me to be unhappy or depressed. And I'm going to literally feel good. Serotonin, which is a feel-good neurotransmitter, pumps after I exercise. Dopamine is a reward drug and it pumps after I exercise. Brain-derived neurotrophic factor is a neurotransmitter that is a fertilizer for my brain. It gives me better brain cells and new brain cells after I exercise. So the major benefits of exercise aren't just to look good, to lose weight, and to do it for a short period of time. I would love everybody to be healthy, fit, and strong, and mentally healthy, fit, and strong for the rest of their life. So where do we start, and does there need to be a variety of exercise, and what are the fundamentals of getting people fit and strong? And I always ask that question of exercise professionals, what if you knew anatomically and physiologically how to get people really fit, and you knew anatomically and physiologically how to get people really strong? So you literally understand the anatomy and physiology of the human body and how it gets fit and strong, every body system. So yes, muscles and bones. Yes, heart and lungs. But what about the hormonal endocrine system? What about the central nervous system? What about the digestive system? What about the immune system? All the body systems that keep us functioning as high-performing human beings. What does exercise do for all of those body systems? How do those body systems work in relationship to exercise? And if we understand that, would a person's life be better if we can get them fit and strong? Ha ha. And then is it possible that every person that we come in contact with is different? Everybody's unique. There's a difference between males and females. There's a difference between old people and young people. There's a difference between people who love exercise and hate exercise. There's a difference between people who sit at a desk and people who have an active life. Everybody's unique and different, right down to some people love certain foods and some people hate those same foods. Some people love certain exercises and other people hate those same exercises. So what if we understand how to get people fit and strong, and then we design, create customized tailor an eating and exercise plan that would suit that person and their lifestyle and their likes and dislikes? So the fundamentals, the beginning, the basics of getting people fit, whether it's an elite athlete or somebody that hasn't exercised for 30 years or has never exercised, is pretty easy to understand. As we know, you've just got to overload your heart and lungs. You've got to get puffed. What is the best way to get puffed? Who cares? Isn't that a great answer? Who cares? Your heart and lungs are blind. They don't know what you're doing as long as they're getting puffed. As long as you have an increase in blood flow, an increase in oxygen, you get rid of the carbon dioxide, you expand your lungs, you make your heart pump faster, that will get you fit. Now, whether you do that by boxing or skipping or running up and down the hallway or running up and down the backyard, doing a martial art, cross trainer, bike, treadmill, rowing machine, dancing, doesn't matter. And the list can go on. Your heart and lungs don't know what you're doing as long as you're getting puffed. And if you get puffed, you're overloading your heart and lungs, which means they are forced next time you do that particular activity to be fitter. And of course, if you've got better blood flow, better oxygen supply, better nutrient supply to all of the systems of the body, will you be a better performing, more high performing human being? Of course. And when you get really puffed, that's when we pump those neurotransmitters your body has to produce to get you to sprint. The chemical change inside your body, as we know, is phenomenal. You can actually feel it when you sprint really hard. And not, it doesn't have to be running sprinting, of course. It might be on a bike. It might be skipping rope. It might be punching a bag. It might be dancing at a nightclub or a ballroom dancing. It doesn't matter. If I'm overloading to the point where I'm really, really puffed, you can feel the chemical changes in your body. And the major chemical change is that to get puffed, you have to produce epinephrine, adrenaline. So you have that chemical change in your body so that you are capable of releasing energy from the cells into the bloodstream so that you can sprint, whatever kind of sprinting. And if you go back to the basics of anatomy and physiology, it is survival. If I've got something chasing me, trying to kill me, trying to hurt me, something stressing me, I have to produce the energy to get out, to get the hell out of there or to fight it. So if I'm forcing my body to sprint, so I'm causing the stress, I'm going, okay, sprint now, then I have to produce those neurotransmitters, which means all of that chemical change happens inside my body and inside my brain. After I've sprinted, I now have dopamine, serotonin levels are evened out, brain derived neurotrophic factor, and I feel really good. that's called fitness, and it's really simple. Just get puffed. Woohoo, Rowie, how do I get fit? Get puffed. How? However you bloody well want. What about getting strong? There is a lot of argument about the best exercises for strength, and there's a lot of argument about how and when and what to do, but when you understand your anatomy and how exercise affects your anatomy and physiology, there's actually no argument. Isn't that exciting? If you understand your anatomy and physiology, you will know too that to get strong, you have to overload your muscles and bones. And how do you do that? Well, you have to overload your central nervous system and your endocrine system as well, because you can't move muscles and bones without a firing of the central nervous system and a release of hormones. The same hormonal response when you sprint is the same hormonal response that you have to have if you're going to lift heavy, because you have to overload. You are causing stress. Instead of fighting an animal or lifting a log or running up a tree, pulling yourself up a mountain, you're lifting something heavy. It requires a change in your body, a hormonal response, a cortisol response, an adrenaline epinephrine response. And if we overload our muscles and bones to produce that hormonal response, and the higher the, or the heavier the lifting, the more the hormonal response, then next time I go to do that, my body says, well, we better be ready. We better be stronger. So we have to overload the muscles, the bones, the central nervous system, the endocrine system as highly overloaded as possible, because obviously big exercises, big results. Big overload, big result. Big stress, big body, big change in the body. So the more I stress my body, the more I'm going to get a change. So, Rowie, how do I get strong? Lift really heavy. And it's really interesting, because most people think lift heavy, go to the gym. But again, your muscles and bones, heart and lungs, endocrine system, central nervous system, all blind, can't count. No idea whether you're lifting a rock or a child or a suitcase or a box of books or a bag of groceries. Just recently, a really cool one is a backpack full of wet towels. And that's all come from a lot of Happy Homes days and now in history, where people couldn't go to the gym but they still wanted to stay strong. So how can I overload my body when I don't have dumbbells or barbells or kettlebells or equipment? Well, anything that forces your muscles to overload will pull on your bones, which causes your skeletal system to get stronger, which causes your immune system to get stronger, because the outside of the bones and the inside of the bones get stronger when you overload. You can't do that without overloading your central nervous system and your endocrine system. And you can't do any of that with having a strong digestive system that's putting high performance fuel in. So see how exciting it is? It all works together. So how do you get strong? Lift something heavy. Argument, which are the best exercises? Well, how about the ones that don't hurt you? Is it possible that if an exercise is going to put shearing forces across your joint, and there's a chance that an exercise will break your joint, bust your joint, wear out your joint, inflame your joint, damage your joint, any joint, that it would be a stupid exercise? Because if you've got a broken anything, you can't do anything. So if an exercise puts shearing forces across your elbow, across your shoulder, across your lower back, across your knees, across your feet, why would you do it? At some stage it's going to hurt your joint. Whereas the human body is designed to have traction and compression forces, which means, number one, we'd be in the upright position because that's how humans move. Number two, if you want your endocrine and central nervous system to work the hardest to get the most overload, you use as many muscles as you possibly can at the same time, which of course means compound exercises. And interestingly, there's a crossover between those two, because if I do little exercises, I get little results, but all the little exercises are all exercises that put not compression forces, they put shearing forces across my joints. So if I'm doing bicep curls or tricep kickbacks or sit-ups or back extensions or shoulder presses or lat raises or leg extensions or leg curls, they're all isolated exercises that put shearing forces across my joints, which give me a risk, and some an extremely high risk of injury, which means there's going to be a chance in the future that I won't be able to exercise. So why the hell would I do those? So there's the question again. How do I get strong? Use as many muscles as you possibly can in one exercise that doesn't have any shearing forces going across your joints. So they're big exercises to get big results. Now there's an argument there. How many exercises do I need? And I always go with the least number possible, because the further we get away from zero, the less likely people are to do their exercise program. Now, not the fanatics. Of course, the fanatics go to the gym for hours and hours and they don't care about shearing forces across their joints, and they get injured all the time and they don't care. They just love it. That's called a culture, almost a cult. But people who want to just be strong and just be fit with the least chance of injury, what's the least amount of exercise I have to do to get that result? I've got to get puffed. Well, how many times do you want to feel good? Because puffing makes you feel good. So my suggestion is always get puffed as many times as you possibly can throughout the day so you feel good all the time. And how often do I need to lift? And what do I need to lift? Well, the how often is really interesting if you understand your anatomy and physiology again, that when you lift something really heavy, that breaks everything down. There's a cortisol response. So your muscles break down, you get micro tears in your muscles, your central nervous system has to recover, your endocrine system has to recover. Everything's got to get over the hard workout that you gave it. That's called regenerate, recover, and then supercompensate. How long does that take? Depending on how hard you exercise, how heavy you lift, it could take up to 7 days or longer for elite athletes. So how often do I need to do this heavy lifting thing? Well, maybe once a week. If you don't lift very heavy, maybe twice a week. So how do I get strong? Pick something heavy to lift and do it once a week. How's that? What exercises do I do? Anything we have to pick something up and put it back down again. And arguably, that is only one exercise. If I pick up something really heavy off the ground and put it back down again, pick it up and put it back down again, I'm using obviously, and I just run through them. I'm obviously using my fingers, I'm using my forearms, I'm using my upper arms, I'm using my shoulders, I'm using my upper back, I'm using my chest, I'm using my abdominals, I'm using my lower back, I'm using every muscle in my legs, in my backside, in my calves, and I'll say it again, my abdominals have to work really hard because otherwise I'd fall over. So there is an argument to say, do I need to do more than one exercise? The human body has three movement patterns. We can push with our upper body, pull with our upper body, and lower ourselves down to the ground, as I shared. So you could argue that there's three exercises to do. So how about this? How do I get strong? Pick three exercises, one that pushes with your upper body, one that pulls with your upper body, and one that lowers your body down to the ground and back up again. But there's an argument to say you'd only need to do one exercise, which is pick something up off the ground and put it back down again. Do it as many times as you possibly can. If you're doing it more than 20 times, there's two challenges. One, it's boring, and two, you're in the wrong energy system to produce strength. We need to be in that firing system, in the phosphate system. We really want to aim to keep that exercise as close to 10 seconds as possible. So we're using stored phosphate. Once you get into the lactate system, now you get lactic acid, which is a byproduct of that system, and it makes people sick and it makes muscles burn. And a lot of people hate that, which is a reason why they stop exercising. Now, I get that some people love it, but if you don't love it and that's the reason why people stop exercising, maybe that's one of those basic things we need to consider. Why would we give people an exercise that gives them a burning sensation in their muscles, which is not burning fat cells, by the way, or exploding fat cells. It's just a release of lactic acid heating up against the nerve endings, and it causes pain. And for some people, it makes them feel sick. So why would we give people an exercise program that makes them want to vomit and burns their muscles? Why not stick to something really short and fast? Around about 10 to 15, maybe 20 times we lift that particular thing and put it back down again. And next time I come in, if I can lift the same weight, I haven't recovered. I have to be able to get stronger every time I exercise, every time I lift heavy. And if I'm not getting stronger, I'm obviously not super compensating enough. I'm not letting my body recover enough. Isn't that interesting? So how do I get fit, get puffed? How do I get strong? Lift something heavy, pick it up off the ground, put it back down again. Make sure you give your body plenty of time to recover. Unique. Everybody's unique and different. That's the third part of being an exercise professional. So find out what people don't like. Find out what people do like. And if they don't like anything, it might be pick the thing that they hate the least. So if you give somebody an option of treadmill, road running, cross training, rowing machine, or dancing, and all you've got to do is get puffed doing one of those, and that's the ones that they've chosen. Which one do you hate the least? Well, I love dancing. All right, well, we're going to dance flat out as hard as we possibly can every so often throughout the day for 10 seconds to get puffed. What do you like to lift? It could be a child. It could be a pot plant. It could be a rock. It could be a log. It could be a kettlebell. It could be a dumbbell. It could be a barbell. Which do you prefer? Let's lift it. Lift that thing as many times as we possibly can, and if we do it more than 20 times, next time we lift, we're going to make it heavier. How simple is it? We get so complicated and we make so many programs so hard to understand and so complicated to do and so long and boring. And guess what? A lot of people don't do them. Have you noticed? 90%, according to the top medical professionals in the world, the top health organizations in the world, are suggesting that 9 out of 10 people do not have an exercise program that will keep them healthy, fit, and strong for the rest of their life. 9 out of 10. So that's only one person out of every 10 people that's actually doing something that will keep them healthy, fit, and strong for the rest of their life. I don't like that statistic. I don't know about you, but I'm an exercise professional and I want people to be healthy, fit, and strong, and I want people to get the benefits of feeling fantastic, having a brain that works, having a brain that can think clearly, having high self-esteem and high self-confidence, less chance of depression, anxiety, Alzheimer's and dementia, all the horrible mental illness diseases. And what about virus? What about disease? The world is full of pandemic viruses and diseases that are literally killing millions of people every year. But fit, strong people are very unlikely to get any of those killer diseases. And if we do get them, we'll fight them much quicker, we'll get rid of them much faster, and they're less likely to come back, including the horrible ones like cancer. So what if it really was as simple as get puffed a few times throughout every day, lift something heavy once a week, pick it up off the ground, put it back down again? And then comes the interesting question about food. But is it possible that if we get people fit and we get people strong, that people will automatically be thinking more clearly about what to eat? Is it possible that if people are really fit and really strong, they won't want to put crappy food into their body because they're going out to sprint or they're going out to lift something heavy? And I always ask that question: if you're about to sprint on your cross trainer or punch the bag or do 10 seconds of flat out skipping, is it possible the last thing you want to do is put takeaway food, lollies, an ice cream or a packet of chips into your body? Is it possible that you want to put high performance fuel in because you're going to be doing a high performance exercise? Could we keep it really simple? Could we all be beginners? Could we go back to basics? And I'm not talking about the people that love going to the gym for hours and doing 27 exercises, 3 sets of 10, and it's their culture. They're part of a cult of lifting and bodybuilding. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about our general public, the real people in the world, the 9 out of 10 people that don't have an exercise program that will give them any form of health benefit for the rest of their life? What if we could help those people? And what if we set the example? So we're not the fanatic and we're not the person who's doing 7 days of exercise, going to the gym for hours and hours. I exercise for 7 days. I do. I'm very happy. I share with people. I don't just exercise every day. I exercise several times throughout the day for about 10 seconds. So I'm constantly happy, constantly pumping happy drugs into my brain, constantly having high energy levels, feel good about myself, feel good about life. And I have an exercise program that's about a minute a day. And my strength training program takes me about 3 minutes because I pick something up off the ground and put it back down again. And, you know, when you're 20, you're meant to be healthy, fit and strong. But when you're an old lady like I am and I'm fitter and stronger than I've ever been, I love being able to share with people when they ask, Rowie, what do you do? You're happy, you're healthy, you're fit and you're strong. What do you do? And my answer is as little as possible. I do as little as possible. I get puffed for about 10 seconds. 4 times an hour, and I lift something heavy once a week. And I eat whatever I bloody well want, whenever I want, and how much I want, because when you've got a body that's healthy, fit, and strong, it becomes a calorie burning machine, a fat burning machine, a sugar burning machine, and you enjoy your food because you eat high performance food so you can be a high performance machine, and that turns your body into a fast metabolism, fast calorie burning machine, and you can actually enjoy your food rather than having to be worried about every calorie that you put into your mouth. I love living like that, and I'd love that for the rest of the people in my life, and I would love to see a world that our kids could grow up in where being healthy, fit and strong and happy and loving their food and loving their exercise was normal. Do you want that for your kids? And if you don't have any kids, I don't either. I just want it for all kids. The people in your life, would you love them to be healthy, fit, strong, mentally and physically, to thoroughly enjoy their food, to thoroughly love their life, to have high self-esteem, high self-confidence, and wake up every morning with a stack of energy, looking into the mirror, loving what they see? Is that something that you would love for you and the people in your life? What a great question.